I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Lou Solomon. Lou is the CEO and founder of Interact, a firm that helps develop individuals into strong communicators by using their own stories, experience, and authentic style. Lou is a member of the adjunct faculty at the McColl School of Business and co-founder of the school's annual Twist Conference. Her latest research in collaboration with Harris Interactive sheds light on the impact of poor communication on employees. Lou's articles and insights have been published by HBR.com, Entrepreneur.com, CEO.com, the American Management Association, Leadership Essentials, Success Magazine, and more. In 2009, Lou released her first book, Say Something Real, which was endorsed by Joseph Pine II, author of The Experience Economy and Authenticity, What Consumers Really Want. Lou, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, David. So good to be here.
So I wondered if we could start off actually by talking a little bit about struggles, because our struggles can often be our greatest gifts. And I know from your background that you have a personal story that will resonate with many of our listeners.
Thank you. Sure. For me, a struggle begins at an early phase of my life, and that was overcoming fear. You might say I grew up in a military family with a fair amount of strife. We had domestic violence. My father, the colonel, who, you know, I liken sometimes to the great Santini, was a complicated man. He certainly was a disciplinarian. I started school in England, and that's when, I mean, schools are different there, but certainly they were more strict then. And since we moved a good bit, I went through being, you know, the new kid at a couple of really strategic points in my life. And I developed a deep shyness and felt really strapped to speak up at times. And in class, wanted so badly to participate. I remember just wanting to raise my hand and provide an answer and could not. My arm stayed frozen at my side. So in fourth or fifth grade, a turning point for me was in fourth or fifth grade, I wrote a short story. It was for the school newspaper. And I remember my mother saying to me, "Well, I just had no idea that you thought about such things." And it flashed in my mind in that defining moment that I was going to forfeit too much if I couldn't speak up, that I was going to go unknown, unnoticed. And it's funny how we make in a nanosecond a life decision like that. And so over the years in my life, it's been a series of decisions to show up. And today people would think who are in my classes, well, there's no way that you dealt with that at any part of your life. But it definitely still informs who I am, and it has driven me to do what I do and Interact. It's very much connected to my work.
Well, you know, our personal stories and the turning points that we have in our life experiences really can have a huge impact on how we behave and what we do with our time over the course of often decades. So it's interesting that your shyness was a trigger for you to do something that involves lots of proactive communication.
Yes. We often ask people in our courses, David, about things that they were able to overcome, which fascinated me since you deal so much in that area and the value that you bring your listeners, because what we find is that very thing is connected to an individual's giftedness. And they are surprised to find that there is an authentic purpose in their lives when they begin to look at those things that they have overcome, because that is where their wisdom is seated. That's where they can admit being qualified as an expert, really. And so it's invariably a part of the leadership experience here that people begin to see how their life has shaped them for the work that they do now.
So I wondered, actually, Lou, if we could probe a little bit about this issue of authenticity and authentic purpose, because I find that it's very difficult to recognize what we're gifted at and what we're really good at. And it seems to me that that might be tied into this issue of authentic purpose. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about authenticity, why it's important, and also how do you recognize what your authentic purpose is if it's not really clear to you?
Well, one thing that is important, I think, about authenticity is to realize that, you know, people come to us, they walk in the door with their authenticity, they just don't know it. In fact, they come to us primarily because they think they're not good enough at speaking, presenting, running meetings, leading conference calls, all those things that are a part of business today and communication. And what we do is just release them into that state of being who they really are. And we do that through story. The moment people begin to tell you about their first job, for instance, their shoulders go down, they relax, they begin to have an easy expression on their face. They remind you of someone who's sitting at a kitchen table having a cup of coffee with you, and that is a very authentic conversational state. It's much different from the cerebral state of trying to think about saying the right words so that they can accomplish whatever it is that's theirs to do in a meeting, that they get a technical depth or a data-oriented message through. That is a distant way of being, and it overvalues content and words. And so we've stripped out of business all too often that piece that is the source of authenticity, which is just being in conversation for the sake of rich conversation. People begin to see that, you know, when they speak from their essential knowing, and your essential knowing are the experiences in your life. You can, you know, there's a cognitive side of your brain, and then there's that essential gut level knowing from your experience. And when you speak from that, when you tell me the defining moments that shaped you, the things that you've overcome, your joys, your giftedness, the things that you do uniquely well each and every time you set out to do them, you know, this is your authenticity. And when people are released into that, they are so much more influential than they are when they are strapped by their own pressure in trying to say the right thing.
So what are some tips you might be able to offer that will help someone listening figure out how to unearth their authentic story?
There is a great term, a West African term called Sankofa, and it means to go back and fetch it. And I think that journaling is one way to unearth the wisdom that is yours, yours alone, to offer in messages that are either community-based or business-based. And it might be just a conversation you recall and some of the best advice you were ever given. And we supply story prompts like this all the time. It might be a character in your family that was unique in the way they lived their life, and as an observer, what you may have learned from that individual. When you use these little nuggets, we call them story bites, in your communication, obviously you can't chalk a business presentation full of these kinds of things, but even a soft break between the more dense content buckets of information you have to give, if you can begin to uncover those pieces and nuggets that are uniquely yours and a part of your essential knowing, you will show up in a different way. You will show up in a different way. Another important piece is to learn to briefly and concisely say what is, without making people wrong, but to take a risk and say something real and honor your own knowing is something many of us skirt. We're afraid of angering people. I mean, you know, here in the South, we are very polite, and we laugh about this a bit with people who, we get people from all over the country, but Southerners will tell you that sometimes a Southern company will struggle with a culture that is almost too nice because people won't say what is. And what is very well could be a 1 minute conversation that gives me a chance to say, you know, this is what's happening and this is perhaps my contribution to it, but it needs to change because it's creating a block. And so we give people equations for that, that keep them in a moment of cleared air and oxygen in the room so that you're not placating or acquiescing, or, you know, that can muddy up a room really quickly and it makes us feel bad. So, you know, I think there's cleared air, there's story bites, there is a genuine way of being that causes us to feel closer to our own giftedness and creativity. Another thing is to define and identify those things that you are, that are, you know, your unique ability is connected to your purpose. And your unique ability is that activity, that contribution, whatever it is that you do so well each and every time that people remark on it being a talent of yours. Perhaps you've been told that over and over in your career. And if you don't get enough time to express that, one thing that I really believe from my own experience is that if you don't get at what is yours to say, you will feel like a frustrated artist. And so for me, being able to find my voice meant pushing and not settling. And I think all of us know what that means. It's a funny thing when I'm coaching folks and I ask them not to settle, instantly people know what that means for them. And so it's getting at the idea that you don't have to settle.
Yeah, I think way too often we box ourselves into situations where we do end up settling. I wondered actually if you could give an example of this what is concept.
The what is what is needing to be said in the room. Recently, for example, we had a fellow come through our course with his teammates. They were consultants, and we'll call him Carlos, was brilliant, and obviously so, but he was condescending to his teammates. He was intimidating. People skirted around him. Everyone else in the room was participating while he had his head down and was doodling or on his device. He sighed heavily from time to time. And so when we were in the private coaching room, We show folks their individual video during the course so we can together see how people are occurring. I asked Carlos, I said, are you enjoying this experience? Are you getting any value from it? And he sighed and said, oh, I'm getting some tips, I guess. And I said, it's interesting, you look so miserable. And his eyes widened, and it was as though he was hearing something for the first time. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, all your body language is so disconnected from your teammates. I wonder how that works for you in terms of getting to know them or, you know, cross-promoting with them or working as a team, because I observed that your back was turned and you sigh heavily often and you look absolutely miserable. And in that instant, his eyes filled with tears. It was startling to him. And I realized that maybe he had gotten to where he was without people saying to him what is. And that is that he was showing up in such a disconnected, negative and condescending way that people were afraid of him and unwilling to be honest with him. And I said, you know, Carlos, if people are not willing to be honest with you, you will miss out on your entire life because you'll live in a bubble. And for the rest of the day, he began to loosen and try and become more vulnerable. And his teammates responded to him differently. So it is taking the risk in just those few lines just to say to someone what is and what needs to be said. Not, and here's the trick, not with a load. You can't deliver what needs to be said with a load that makes somebody wrong. You have to simply say what is without making them some sort of villain. And they will receive it. And if they don't receive it, at least you will be in an authentic state and aligned with integrity. And you don't shame people, you don't do it in front of others, but you align with your own integrity so that you say what is.
Yeah, it seems to me that there's probably a delicate balance between taking the risk to tell someone else what is, in terms of the way you're observing it, without being personally threatening to them.
No question. It's only the confident source that would make a statement like that and not have to threaten. You have to come from a place of checking your intentions, and it's always about that. What are my intentions?
Right, and I would assume that if your intentions are to help the other person, and it's not about you, it's about them, that probably helps quite a bit.
Absolutely. I recently had a woman in a course who was a bit of a problem person in terms of what the impact she had on the rest of the team, and her boss had said something to me about that in the discovery interview that we go through just to make sure we can be of maximum value to everyone. And when she came into the room, she threw her stuff on the conference table and said, just what I need to be doing in another public speaking course. And I said, well, hey, you're in luck, because this isn't a public speaking course. This is about breaking down how you connect with other people to build trust and to have positive and prosperous and productive encounters and working relationships. And she sort of rolled her eyes. And then when we began the course, at some point I was explaining the format and what they could anticipate. And she interrupted saying, well, I don't understand what you're talking about. Is it about public speaking or not? And I paused and knew that with someone who was, you know, dominating the airwaves like this person in front of the rest of the team, it would be important to set the tone so that she not rob herself and her teammates of the experience that day. And I said, well, and we'll call her Rachel. I said, well, Rachel, how is that approach in your communication working for you? Does it help you connect with people? She said, I don't understand what you mean. I said, well, your approach with the way you interacted with me just now, does that work for you in the way that you have relationships with people? And immediately she got quiet and just huffed and closed her arms. But the rest of the team, in a relieved way, jumped in and began to participate. And, you know, as that behavior became more popular, she began to ease into the conversation. And so saying what is can be startling to the person, I think. But as long as it's done with the intent to help or facilitate authentic communication at a higher level, then, you know, it's appropriate.
So speaking about this kind of communication, I know, Lou, that you've done a lot of work in the area of communication with virtual employees. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what kinds of trends you've observed.
Absolutely. Virtual employees are so much part of our world today. And, you know, we've come a long way. We have overcome the distance in terms of just geography and miles between headquarters and a virtual employee, but we have not overcome the distance of human separation, which is, it's interesting that we haven't really effectively dealt with the fact that people are in a state of separation when they work virtually. And that creates less than optimum work. People feel unappreciated. The research that I did with Harris Interactive showed that the greatest majority of virtual workers interact with their bosses only through email, very seldom picking up the phone, and even more seldom having an opportunity to come together at least once a year in a live fashion so that you can see people face-to-face. And you will only establish trust face-to-face with people. You will not do it via technology. You can sustain a relationship with contact, but in terms of really establishing relationship and trust, it needs to be done face-to-face. And so what we saw was that people are unhappy when they're in a state of separation, when they work virtually, if the leadership of an organization doesn't become intentional about a communications initiative that takes into account that person's scenario and how to touch them, how to reach them. And some of the things that we know help are, you know, a live conversation, being able to see someone's face is really important. So, you know, whether it's video conference or Skype, just being able to see someone's face, the brain is wired to recognize a human's face in a very special way. You know, having an annual, preferably a biannual meeting where a team can come together in person. People say, well, that's, you know, budget restrictive. Well, you know, it's much more costly over a year to have an employee who's not operating at a maximum productivity level and doesn't feel really connected to other human beings. You know, the human connection is very much a part of what we need to be our best. There's a wonderful author, Ed Hallowell, and he writes about the human moment and how if people are socially disconnected, they will develop paranoia, you know, in terms of, well, who's on this email and why wasn't I invited to this? And they will read tone into email. We've all done that, but it is the human relationship that changes that. And it means that supervisors have regular conversations, preferably with, you know, access to a face visual with the folks who are working visually. And if the workforce is so large, then we have to get at creating smaller teams of, you know, six, seven people is the ideal for intimacy, and that those teams develop a way of working together and speaking and connecting on a regular basis that gives a sense of relationship.
Lou, you've done so much important work in this area. I wondered if you could share a little bit about your own background in terms of your influencers that have helped you develop your expertise and that have been pivotal in your own professional development.
You know, I always think about an author when I think about influencers for me. And Brenda Yulin wrote in the 30s, and, you know, all the way back, it could have been 38, I think, but she was living in Greenwich Village. She was a writer. She taught writing as well. And her book, which she's easily most known for, If You Want to Write, is not just a book about writing. And at a very pivotal time in my life, as I was trying to break to a new way of thinking in my life, at the time I was, my first love was broadcasting, was radio, and I was so certain that I needed to move out of that industry because it wasn't my true place anymore. Consolidation was happening and stations were being bought and sold right and left, and all the resources that I loved so much about broadcasting were being fused for the economy. The news departments were effectively being wiped out of radio and skinnied down, and news sponsorships were coming into play. So I knew that I needed to find whatever it was that was mine to do. I picked up a copy of that book. I was on a retreat at Black Mountain, North Carolina, and there was a little bookshop in the lobby of this big lodge, and I went out to one of the big rockers on the porch and read it in that one sitting. And I have a dog-eared copy near me at all times. It's just my, you know, my Bible, as she was an extraordinary woman. And it is her, you know, I'm looking at the book right now. The full title of the book is If You Want to Write, a Book About Art, Independence, and Spirit. And it very simply says that everybody is highly unique, everybody is original, and everybody has something very powerful to say. And there is something in us that knows that and knows whether or not we're settling. And it just has been the undercurrent so much to all that I have done in my work since founding Interact.
Isn't it amazing how one resource can be so pivotal in our own development?
It is. And I have gone back to that book countless number of times and been reinforced by it. It's really a spiritual resource for me. There's something in her words that resonates so deeply with me that, yes, it was a deep inspiration for me and continues to be.
Yeah, Vivek Tiwari, who was a guest on this podcast a while back, talked about the concept of a historical mentor. It was someone you never met, but has had tremendous influence on everything that you do. It's an amazing concept.
I love that, absolutely. And I instantly thought what sprung to my mind was musicians who love the music of someone who's gone before them and are influenced by it, is what hit my brain when you said that.
Yeah, that's so true. So Lou, I wonder if you could spend a little bit of time talking about what you're working on now. What's coming up for you?
Well, the most exciting, you know, I say the most exciting because everything we do excites me. I'm one of those people who is so blessed to get up in the morning and I can't wait to get in here. That is a gift. But we did the pilot earlier in the year. We have a new course called Storylines, A Guide to Storytelling in Business. And for just the reason that you and I were talking about how you release people into authenticity, it's a course on just that for people in business who struggle to connect with others in a real way. And we walk through the process of recapturing story, of understanding what story bites are. We look at the forms of story as they present themselves in metaphor, an analogy, illustration, even a quote by a wonderful relative you had. My grandfather once told me, for instance, that, you know, in his way, he was telling me to be true to myself, but the way he said it was, if you have to tell them who you are, girl, you ain't. And so I share that with the class, and they come forth with their own wonderful life material. And we talk about how to structure a business communication, leaving pockets, soft breaks, we call them, for a moment of real for them, which is for them to renew their own well of inspiration in that moment of communication, but also to engage the listener. And so it is a journey through what it is to understand story. We do some of Joseph Campbell's wonderful work with the hero's journey. We all have a hero's journey that once understood connects you to that purpose we were talking about, that noble purpose. And at the end of the course, they get a self-study guide of story types that they can take away and journal more deeply into uncovering their story library, we call it. Because at the end of the day, each of us has this vast story library, and it might even be just something that happened yesterday when the kids were in the car, and that's on my mind because I had somebody tell me, you know, I was driving my kids somewhere and they were talking about Freaky Friday and they wanted to be like this mom or that mom, and then someone on the back seat said, well, you know, I want to be like Mrs. Michener, because she carries a briefcase and she's a cool mom too. And the gal who was telling me this, Mrs. Michener, said, you know, I was sitting under a stoplight and for an instant my entire universe came together, because I have always wanted to express myself fully in a career, but it has been so important for me to be a good mom to my kids. And from a 9-year-old, I got that validation. It was as though the universe was winking at me. Now, you know, she could use that at a women's luncheon and connect deeply with everyone in the room because it's her own essential knowing. And we explore those things so that people can understand, you know, storytelling is not long narratives that, you know, or campfire stories. It's the snippets of life. It's the stories of real moments, even if it's a conversation that, excuse me, you had with your colleague in the hallway. When you humanize your communication, you begin to resurface into your own authenticity.
Sounds great. It sounds very exciting. I'm looking forward to hearing more about how things turn out.
Great.
So, Lou, I wondered if you could share someone you know personally who's doing remarkable work.
Absolutely. The first person who comes to mind, two people, I suppose, Sheila Mullen and Suzanne Fetzer. Sheila Mullen is the director of the Innovation Institute at McCall Center, which is an artist-in-residence nonprofit here in Charlotte. And what it is, business people attend the Innovation Institute to learn from artists who are in residence there about thinking newly and to consider failure as just source material for the next breakthrough and to see their own work from a different perspective. It's really fascinating work. Suzanne Fetzer heads up the McCall Center. Sheila's over the program, the Innovation Institute, that's a part of the artist residency nonprofit. But, you know, they're not after teaching people to be an artist, but they want to share the thinking of an artist as applied to business. And they do put them in aprons and they sling paint and all of that, but mostly just to get themselves into a vulnerable way of clearing their mind and considering a different point of view. And it's fascinating.
Those are great examples. Lou, how can listeners learn more about you?
By going to our website, which is interactauthentically.com. And there is a host of articles and information about who we are and our programs there. And absolutely the best way to inquire about us a bit more.
That's great. Well, Lou, it's been a really fascinating discussion today about authenticity and communication and all the interesting work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Lou Solomon, CEO and founder of Interact. Thank you again, Lou, for joining us.
Thank you, David.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.